Morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, a lot of motorsports to catch up on. We've got Formula One from Holland today. That's the first race back after the summer break for Formula One. IndyCars last weekend in Wisconsin, back in Nashville for the final race of the season. NASCAR will be racing in South Carolina at Darling tonight on the Classic Southern 500. Got a couple of cool articles out of the Old Car Weekly magazine. Of course, we'll talk about what's going on with gas prices. And of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten the seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, first article today is from the pages of Old Car Weekly. Now it's just called Old Cars. And the title of the article from the editor says, Why We Go to Shows. Well, we've walked miles of aisles through car shows, checking out cars and trucks on display. Experience was a great reminder of why enthusiasts across the country gathered on hallowed weekends after dusting off our vehicles, gassing them up, and driving them from near and far, only to plant them in a grass field or a hot parking lot and sit in a lawn chair. It's for the stories. On a sunny, hot day, took to the shade with some friends that I had met through Old Car. Denise and her husband, Jesse. Jesse's father, Harold. Dawn, and each one of these members of her family, including Denise, have all had their cars featured in Old Cars over the last couple decades. And while relaxing in the shade and swapping tales with Dawn, I was reminded about how educationally these stories that happen at the car shows can be. Now, Denise recounted many years ago that her story in Old Cars about her sister's 1978 GMC Sierra pickup truck K15. Now, Dawn had purchased the low-mileage truck in 1988 after a long search for a short-box 4x4 that didn't make it into the article about Dawn's storied past when the truck learned about its first 10 years and the 24,000 miles by attending a car show. Now, while attending a small-town show a few years back, Dawn noticed someone inspecting her truck more than average, and she was spending unique time on its homemade trailer hitch. After she approached him and offered to answer any questions, the man told her that he had bought the truck brand new. And she asked him, "Well, how did you know this is the same truck?" He pointed to the trailer hitch. He said, "I made that." Dawn found the truck through her father, Harold, who operates a repair shop and maintains a business relationship with several local car dealers. Harold had been helping Dawn search for trucks before they finally found a 1978 GMC that would become hers and a used car lot, the dealer who he did business with. When Harold inquired about the truck, he learned that a dealership employee had been told he could buy the Primo pickup. However, the dealer wanted to maintain a positive relationship with Harold and told him that his daughter could buy the pickup truck if she really wanted it. Well, of course, Dawn jumped at the chance to buy the truck, but she said over the years she's always felt a little guilty for buying the truck out from underneath the dealership employee. Well, not too many years ago, a man walked up to Dawn's 1978 GMC pickup truck and gave it the twice over and asked her if she had bought it from Fox Valley GMC in Appleton around 1988. Well, she confirmed that she had, and when the man told Dawn that he was the employee that had been promised first dibs on the pickup truck, well, Dawn admitted she knew the story and had always felt bad for purchasing it before he could. But he told her that he was glad that she bought the truck instead. He said, "Yeah, if I bought it, I probably would have ended up in a junkyard instead of on some show field." And that relieved Dawn of any guilt that she may have felt. Well, sometimes we are sharing these stories about old cars and trucks for the education and the hobby at large. We can sometimes learn some things about ourselves, as Dawn and the GMC have proven. And it's just one more reason why we should regularly gas up and drive all those old cars till those weekend shows and learn something about ourselves. Well, from the pages of the Drive website, the headline reads, Sony and Honda's direct sales model for the Afeela EV is already facing a lawsuit. Well, about this time next, about next spring is when the Sony Honda Mobility is expected its first deliveries of its first car, the Aphelia 1 electric sedan in California. Now, being the product of a joint venture between the electronics giant and the automotive giant, it stands for reason that the Aphelia vehicle sits with its own brand, apart from the legacy Honda and Acura marquees. However, that's of little consequence to franchise dealers in the state who have asked Los Angeles County Superior Court to bar Honda Mobility from accepting reservations on the upcoming EV immediately because of its direct sales approach that they have taken with the new vehicle. Quote, this is a direct attack on the 161 franchised Honda and Acura dealers in California that have been loyal partners in building the brand's reputation and success for decades. And that's from California New Car Dealer Association President Brian Mass, said in a statement quoted to Automotive News. By cutting the dealer out, they are stripping a vital consumer protection like local service support, transparent pricing, and warranty assistance. Now, the conflict between franchisees and automakers pursuing direct sales has been raging since Tesla became the first to make headway into the market. The difference is that Tesla was not an established automaker before it started selling its cars directly to the public, so it was able to step aside the laws protecting franchisees in certain states. Now, the Sony Honda Mobility Group, on the other hand, does belong to a part of a company that already has an existing retail network. This is not the only new car brand that has run into such legal problems such as this. Scout Motors, which by its own admission is a member of the Volkswagen Group, despite being managed independently, has been taken to court for its own direct sales strategy. As Automotive News pointed out, California law signed by Gavin Newsom in 2024 prohibits automotive manufacturers from starting brands to compete with franchise dealers. Now, in the Scout's case, it's easy to understand why Volkswagen dealers might be a little peeved. Volkswagen pivoted to a SUV lineup in the States over the last decade, but not quite resonating with its buyers. The Scout's rough and tumble patriotic attitude and plans to sell a pickup truck and an electric one is arguably compelling in this market. Honda's situation is a little different. The Aphelia 1 rides on the same platform as the other EVs that Honda has built at its Ohio facility, like the Acura RSX and Honda Zero Series, cars that dealers will get to sell. On paper, it's not exactly slated to be technology-inspired EV of 2026. The sedan's 300-mile range and a charging state of 150 kilowatts when it hits the showroom next week. It'll start at $102,000. With a self-driving feature only included for 3 years. A cheaper version won't come out until 2027, and that will cost $90,000. Now, the Aphelia 1 is an experiment in some ways, setting aside its Chinese market players. It's North America's first example of a consumer electronics company embracing the business of selling cars. It's also gambling that its clientele is out there waiting to pay a high price for an expanded self-driving capabilities even that if the Aphelia 1 supports won't be able to be legally deployed at launch, assuming that laws stand as they do today. All to say is I'm not sure what if this fight is necessarily going to pay off for the California Honda and Acura dealers in the way it could for Volkswagen. At the same time, the association perception is it must lodge its case against all automakers to possible establish the consistency and the precedent. Meanwhile, the car appears to be sticking, Aphelia seems to be sticking to its ramp-up plans, having opened up pop-up showrooms across the state throughout spring and summer, and the first permanent retailers are slated to open their doors later this year in Torrance and Fremont, and any California interested in plonking down a refundable $200 reservation can go to the company's website. Yeah, this is an interesting story. Is this really a Honda? Well, yeah, because it's Honda and Sony, but the direct-to-sales model could and might be the future of automotive sales. Car news. Last weekend, IndyCar was up in Milwaukee, and the headline reads, Rasmussen runs ragged en route to maiden IndyCar victory at the famed Milwaukee Mile. Well, Alex Palou owned the Snap-on 250 at the Milwaukee Mile. Well, all but the last 15 races when Christian Rasmussen chased down the new IndyCar champion and ripped the lead and a potential ninth win away from his hands to score his first IndyCar victory. Rasmussen spent most of the afternoon firing around cars passing on the inside and outside, often with a large amount of oversteer to correct the number 21 Chevrolet, and brought Ed Carpenter Racing back to victory lane in grand style. Quote, "It feels amazing," Rasmussen said. "You know, it's just a testament to where this team is going. There's so much work going on this year, rebuilding ECR as a great team, and this is the great way to end the season. One more, hopefully we can do the same next weekend. I thought we made the exact right choice to come in and get tires. Even though on the radio it was a little bit of code, I knew what he meant. Well, we thought we had talked about this before the race. If there's a late caution, we're going to go to new tires because there's such an advantage. Good day at the office." Now, Alex Palou, who held on for second in the number Chip Ganassi Racing, behind him, then Team Penske's Scott McLaughlin completed the podium. And the number three Chevrolet, the ECR Alexander Rossi, came in fourth, and Arrow McLaren Pato O'Ward came in fifth. Yeah, folks, I was watching this race, and it was so exciting to see this young man come and take away this race from the four-time champion, and the crowd was going crazy. So congratulations to Christian Rasmussen and the folks at Ed Carpenter Racing for their first win in many, many years, and hopefully more to come. A chatter last week amongst many of my friends who are IndyCar and motorsports fans, as there was an article in Racer Magazine talking about the fact that Phoenix could be back on the schedule for IndyCar as soon as next season. Because of the low attendance at the Iowa race this year, there is conversation in the rumor mill that a combination IndyCar-NASCAR race could be at Phoenix, with IndyCars running on March the 7th and the Cup Series running on Sunday, March the 8th. So, very, very excited. So we'll see if that happens. Of course, there's a brand new race in Texas the following weekend. And then there's also conversation. NASCAR is not going back to Mexico. Well, IndyCar is looking to go to Mexico next season. So a lot of things happening with IndyCar season, and exciting. Hopefully this Phoenix race does come to fruition. IndyCar is on its final race of the season, even though the championship was established a couple weeks ago with Alex Palou winning his fourth championship. IndyCar is racing in Nashville, and you can tune over to that race after the car show, and that is going to be on Fox 10 broadcast, and the Pato O'Ward is on the pole. Car news, and the headline reads, Hamlin takes Darlington pole. Well, Denny Hamlin led a Joe Gibbs front row sweep at the Darlington Raceway for the NASCAR Cup qualifying yesterday. Hamlin, a three-time Southern 500 winner, earned the pole with a lap of 171.38 miles per hour. It's his second pole at Darlington of his career. Sunday will be the 45th time that Denny Hamlin has led the field to the green in his career, and the 40th time he's done so in a Toyota. Well, Chase Briscoe qualified second at 171.25, and Chase Briscoe is the defending winner at Darlington. So if you'd like to check that race out, that race is going to be on the USA Network, and that starts here locally at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'll have those results for you next weekend. Now, because Monday is a holiday, that's Labor Day, we have some racing on Monday. Don't traditionally get that, but it is the U.S. Nationals. And if you're a fan of the straight line speed, the NHRA Drag Racing Series is going to be on Fox Sports 1 as well as Fox Broadcast tomorrow. Fox Sports 1, the racing kicks off at 9 a.m. locally, and that's Fox Sports 1. And then on Fox Broadcast, Channel 10, they will be live at 11 a.m. for some U.S. Nationals Top Fuel Drag Racing. Well, from the pages of old cars, the title of this article is Trucking Forward. While wasting precious time on social media, I often see posts of vintage vehicles next to late model Toyotas, Teslas, and other new cars. Old cars, well, I don't think they're going to be restoring some of those cars in 25 years. I usually scoff at these posts because I can't guarantee that those vehicles will be restored in the future. But did anyone think that people would be restoring or modifying 1980s Chevy Caprice Classics 25 years after they were originally built? I highly doubt it. But guess what? People like me, I proved them wrong because we own a 1984 Caprice. Admittedly, we don't have a crystal ball and can't predict the future with some certainty. But those social media posts are largely due to many factors. Modern cars have advanced technology and the latest and greatest of the day. It will probably become outdated and completely unsupported in 25 years. Now, drivers' attitudes are also changing. Many hold on to cars with the same affection they did for their refrigerator or their clothes dryer or other appliances. However, I think of any current vehicle types, trucks transcend this appliance mentality. And in 2050, you might see 25-year-old vehicles, they'll be restored, but I'm thinking they're probably going to be of the truck variety. Now, today's truck buyers are often what we call car people. They appreciate the design, the power of the vehicle, and that they're finding in a modern truck. Take a look around. Of the new vehicles on the roads today, the most interesting styles are the pickup trucks, whether they're from Ford, Dodge, Toyota, Nissan, or General Motors. In the quest to save fuel, the car design has become a little more functional with its aerodynamic, also a little trickier to integrate that character into a relatively thin, wedge-shaped body. Conversely, trucks have broad fronts, flanks, giving designers lots of canvas to make more interesting designs. And look at the people who often consider them cars more than appliances. They tend to drive trucks. They often personalize them. And I would almost bet many old car readers have a truck in their fleet. And I'm putting my hand up because I do as well. Back in the 50s and 60s, many cities and towns had speed shops for personalizing their cars. Today, those local speed shops are all but extinct. But you don't have to search long for finding a shop that sells aftermarket appearance items for trucks. And when it comes down to it, the owner of a truck generally bonds with their vehicle more than the driver of a commuter car. Often the truck becomes a coworker, a comrade in arms, as you will, somewhat of a tradesman's driver. The go get it, do it yourself builder, a similar relationship with his car, her car, or truck. Use it to more than just haul things for evenings and weekends. They're more likely to keep that old friend in good shape and around for a while longer. And they may even look to add an older friend into their garage. Yes, in the long-term future, I think trucks are where the hobby is headed. In the meantime, Old Car Magazine appreciates them today and are pleased to share stories within the pages of the magazine. I totally agree with that. I have been a pickup truck driver for a long time. Besides my Corvette, I have a 2009 Toyota Tacoma with 188,000 miles on it, and I would not think about trading that truck for anything. It is my friend. We go camping. That's my daily driver. We pick up things for friends who need stuff to haul around. I totally agree. I think the car collector hobby could be moving to trucks in the future. One race from Zandvoort, which is in the Netherlands, just finished up, and Oscar Piastri for McLaren is your winner. Interesting enough, he was being chased by his teammate Lando Norris, and Lando Norris's engine blew, so he did not finish the race. Max Verstappen finished in second, and driving for the second Red Bull team, the Red Bulls, Isaac Hajer, who makes his first podium appearance, so really fun. And both the American team, the Haas, they finished in two cars in the top 10. So I'll have more details for you next weekend, but Oscar Piastri wins the Formula One race. Weird and unusual automotive news. It says, imprisoned diesel tuner hoping for Trump pardon receives backing from his state legislature. Well, a Wyoming state representative is pushing for a presidential pardon for Troy Lake, owner of Elite Diesel, who is convicted of conspiring to violate the Clean Air Act. The government's accused of Lake of disabling hundreds of heavy-duty trucks across the country and joining eight co-conspirators in seven states who were previously sentenced. Lake pled guilty and was sentenced to 12 months and one day in custody and currently must pay $52,000 in personal and business fines. Now, Chip Newman, Speaker of the Wyoming House of Representatives, penned a letter to the Attorney General asking that more than 40 of his House members signed on this, asking for the unjust prosecution and conviction under the Clean Air Act from the Biden administration. Now, Lake's plea agreement shows that his company instructed employees to tamper with emission control systems on at least 344 heavy-duty commercial trucks. I wasn't trying to be Robin Hood or anything. He said, just trying to help people. And then the word got out across the country. Well, the representative from the legislature of Wyoming defends Lake and his actions, saying that these systems are widely documented to cause severe reliability issues, including engine failures, engine fires, and reduced efficiencies, and that actually what he was doing was a good thing. Now, according to the Representative Newman and the other who co-signed the letter, Lake was not motivated by justice, rather by politics. The letter claims that they was weaponized, the regulatory state targeted Lake and Elite Diesel, with presiding judge saying that she wanted to make an example of this case. Now, zooming out, Lake is one of many diesel tuners that have been handed major fines for violating the Clean Air Act. And it's interesting that they are actually asking President Trump to give him a pardon and have the charges dropped. I can't imagine this is the last we're going to hear of this story. So, once again, weird and unusual automotive news. Season in motorsports right now as we wind up the IndyCar season. And here's some of the rumors right now about what's happening in IndyCar. Colton Herta is leaving IndyCar to race in Formula 2 to try to earn a super license so they can drive Formula 1. Alex Palou is leaving Chip Ganassi Racing and is going to go to Formula One as Red Bull Max Verstappen's teammate. Will Power is leaving Team Penske. He's going to replace Colton Herta at Global Andretti. David Malukas is leaving and AJ Foyt Racing and will replace Will Power at Team Penske, and so on and on and on. So this stuff happens every year. These are the stories that are happening in IndyCar right now, and we'll just have to wait till the end of the season to see if any of these stories will actually happen, and we'll know then. But right now, there's lots of rumors what's going on in the IndyCar paddock. Well, as we head into one of the last big summer, actually the last big summer holiday weekend, what's going on with gas prices from our friends at AAA? Well, right now, average gas price in the United States is $3.18 a gallon. Average gas price in Arizona is $3.43. Over in New Mexico, over $3 for the first time, at $3. Colorado, $3.13. Utah, $3.28. Nevada, $3.82. And California, $4.60 a gallon. Head a little bit east, over in Texas, $2.77. Oklahoma, $2.77 as well. And $2.71 in Mississippi. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Arizona. Well, for all those travelers up near the Grand Canyon, Williams, gas prices continue to be the least expensive in the state, $2.49 at the Shell station on Grand Canyon Boulevard. The Maverick station is at $2.54, and the Love's Travel stop in Williams as well at $2.54. KJ's convenience stop in Tucson at $2.74. The Arco station in Sedona, don't really hear about Sedona having cheap gas prices, at $2.77 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on here in Metro Phoenix with our gas prices. Well, gas prices have been creeping up in Phoenix. Last couple weeks, we've had gas prices under $3 a gallon, and there is none of that to be had. Right now, $3.09 at the Circle K at 58th Avenue and Indian School. The Sam's Club on Gilbert Road at $3.09. The Costco on Market Street is $3.19. and the Walmart on Northside in Scottsdale at $3.23 a gallon. So gas prices definitely up for this Labor Day weekend holiday. Well, we've reached that time of the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, what happens if you're given the wrong spark plugs by the auto parts store and you, not knowing any better, install them in your 4Runner? My son-in-law had an awful experience after installing what he later found out to be the wrong spark plugs for his 1995 Toyota. Now, why can't the auto parts stores get the correct parts? Is this a common experience? I love Car Talk, both the original on NPR and the Apple Podcasts. Thanks, and that's from Bruce. Well, I think the auto parts generally do give people the right parts, Bruce. All that stuff is computerized, so the correct information is certainly available to them. Now, if the guy waiting on the counter just got a text from his girlfriend saying that she's leaving him for his cousin Regina, human error can occur. And I don't want to condemn every Pep Boys and Napa store just because there's an occasional mistake. Also, if you're working on your own car, you do bear some responsibility to make sure that the parts you get are correct. And if you're a DIYer, well, the first thing you do is compare the old part to the new one before you put the new part into your car or truck. Anyway, I'm guessing your son-in-law's truck ran poorly after he installed the new spark plugs, and what could cause it to run poorly? Well, let's start out with operator error. I've had in many situations in our garage where a mechanic has accidentally dropped the plug on the ground. If it hits tip first, it closes the gap, and the plug of a gap of, let's say, 8 thousandths of an inch instead of 40 thousandths of an inch, well, if that happens, it'll barely fire. It's also part possible to crack the plug's insulator when you tighten the plug into the cylinder. If that gets cracked, the plug won't do anything, and then your truck will be running on 5 of its 6 cylinders. Now, if they actually gave him the wrong plugs, the consequences could range from insignificant to disastrous. If the plugs fit, if they're the correct thread size and length, and just have different parameters, let's say the wrong resistance or the gap size, no permanent damage will occur. In fact, the truck might run pretty well. In that case, if the performance is affected, swapping out the plugs for the correct ones will completely fix that problem. Worst case scenario, they gave him the wrong plug size and the threads are too long and it protrudes out into the cylinder. If you install those, the top of the piston could crash into the plug and you could break a piston or bend a connecting rod. Fortunately, you won't find that out until you start the engine, and that's when the funeral dirge will start playing on your radio. I'm hoping they just gave him the wrong plugs with the wrong parameters, not the wrong length and the size. If that's all it is, he should just change the plugs and you should be good to go. Yeah, that's one of the things where buyer beware. You better make sure you know exactly what you're putting in your car and make sure that they're the ones that fit and what the manufacturer calls for. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.